lag it.
Screwed up my phone.
We'll work it up. It screwed up your phone. Good, that's a good start. Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Sorry for the absence. I haven't been around for a while. I've had loads of work. It's been really cool. But I've missed out doing the shows, unfortunately. So well done to Wrighty for taking over the big show at short notice last week. He did a great job. But and the Mac Show's kind of been last minute as well. And awfully sorry, but these are the way things happen. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple News, a great team, though, who've turned out at short notice, despite the fact that it was organised by a moron. Starting top left, Don. Happy New Year, mate.
Hello, Happy New Year. Haven't I been on this year? Doesn't seem that long ago.
I was going to say, mate, I haven't been on this year.
There you go, mate. Definitely not, then. Happy New Year.
Is it as cold up in Liverpool as it is down here?
It's freezing.
It's fudging cold.
Absolutely freezing, yeah. I've got extra heaters going on in the studio here, so I've switched it off for now because it's a bit noisy, but if you hear a loud humming noise in the background, it's got too cold, so I've had to switch it back on again.
Did you have a good Christmas?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, smashing. Oh, right. Actually, I'm not supposed to be here this week. I was supposed to be on holiday this week. I'm supposed to be in the Gambia, but we got it cancelled a couple of days before because of the unrest, or because they knew that we were going, one of the two. But so
it's difficult to understand that they were unresting as opposed to just preparing for your visit with red carpets, etc.
Yeah, they couldn't pull it off at the last minute, so it all got cancelled. But never mind. At least we got a full refund because it was the government decided we couldn't go. They put a ban on travel, so we got a refund. So that was good.
Cool. Did you get any last minute detail? Any last minute?
No, we decided to leave it now till leave it for a month or two, and we'll try and find something else.
Yeah, do a bit of work in between the holidays.
Actually, it's been good because we sort of learned about 4 or 5 days before we went, and I was actually in a mad panic trying to get everything finished for why we went away, and then suddenly pressure was off. So, yeah, I've been fairly relaxed this week because I wasn't supposed to be doing any work, so I managed to get a lot done this week.
Muller's pointing out in the chat room we're toasty here because I've got your old Mac Pro running away underneath the desk.
Yeah, actually, I miss that. That does make a big difference, especially when I used to have two of them running at the same time. In fact, I had to buy an air conditioner to get the temperature down in the room when we had two going at once.
Disney Liverpool when he turned them on.
Next to him, Adam.
Hey.
How you been, mate?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I haven't been on.
No, you haven't. How's the shingles?
We're all good. Better.
Excellent. Good news, mate. Now then, you said, because you might have had a bit of a dig at me for saying that Siri was crap the other day in the chat room, and but you said that you skimmed your Amazon Echo out the front door. What's happened?
Yeah, the thing's shit.
Come on, tell us more, mate. What happened then?
I got it from my family. They kept screaming at me because the stupid thing goes off all the time when nobody says anything anywhere near the trigger word. You just like wake up and be like, and I've tried all the trigger words, so don't tell me change the trigger word. And I'm certainly not using computer because that's the stupidest trigger word ever, especially in a tech family.
Computer, order 48 bug rolls.
Right. But yeah, it constantly goes off when no one says anything to it.
I'm not getting that. I mean, it does it sometimes.
Yep. Me neither.
How close is it to the TV?
I've talked to another couple of people. It has nothing to do with the TV because the TV's not on.
Right, okay. I don't know then.
It has nothing to do with that.
I've got
anyway, it goes off once or twice a night by the TV.
It's fine. I mean, it's fine. I just haven't particularly... It'll be living in my office. But yeah, I was getting so much of it, I was like, set up, and I'm just like, I am ripping this thing out and I'm hucking it out the front door. It was about that close. I had it in my hand and was ready to just toss it.
And we're talking about something which is exponentially better than Siri as well.
I disagree with that. I don't see exponentially better at all. At all, in my experience.
Okay.
It depends on the situation. It depends on the thing. It's great. I'm not saying it's not a great piece of technology and does some amazing things, but it is far, far from perfect, just like Siri is. Far from perfect.
Any piece of technology that allows me via a podcast to order 48 toilet rolls for someone somewhere in the world can't be bad. All bad anyway.
I'm not saying it's bad. Okay. I'm just saying it has issues. And I ran into one of them. Because I want to be very clear about that. Because I know a lot of people really love the Amazon Echo. And it's fine. It's great. But it's not perfect. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the only thing I can say that's positive about that really is the fact that the Amazon Echo has never ordered anything for me that I didn't want. And when I've asked it for something to do, it's never sold me the cinemas that are nearby me, regardless of what the question was that I asked, which Siri seems to do all the bloody time. And last but by no means least, it is Doc.
Good morning.
Oh, what time is it there?
6 a.m.
You're a dude, man, for getting up for us. Are you showered as well?
Yeah.
You showered before this as well? Damn, you're good.
Yeah.
You were texting me when I was naked. America.
Good man, mate. Love you too.
And Doc's always looking good.
He does, yeah.
You know, you got a reputation. Something. But, dude, I'm surprised that you're having these problems with your Echo. Mine's just flawless. I love it. And it's definitely exponentially better than Siri.
How many people do you constantly have in the room with your Echo?
It's in my shop, like literally right underneath my Star Wars collection. So on a given day, 20, 30 customers sometimes. The other day I had like 8 people in my shop for like 2 hours.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I have a Dot. I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe it's defective. Maybe I need to go get a new one.
We've got the one.
Yeah, I would definitely swap it out because it's, and I have mine on Alexa. The only thing that I have a problem with, which is kind of funny, is sometimes it doesn't answer me because my Starbucks barista, her name is Alexis, and I call each of them the opposite as a 50-year-old man should do. So sometimes I tell the Echo, I say, hey, Alexis, and it doesn't answer me. And then I realize that I just called it my barista, and back and forth, I call my barista Amazon. And... yeah, you not a good look because she's like half Dominican, half Hawaiian, and I'm pretty sure she can kick my ass.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, and to be clear on mine, it wasn't me. It was everybody in my family telling me, get this thing out of here, get this thing out of here, and I finally had it.
We've got the Echo doesn't have a problem, but the Dot does go off with the TV, but it's right underneath the TV, so it's not surprising.
Yeah, that's the same with mine. Probably 2 or 3 times. Well, no, twice a night, probably it'll just go off for no reason, but that's okay. I can live with that.
Yeah.
See that?
You know, the funny thing, Adam, is there is two different going-offs, too, though, right? One of mine's, the light just lights up and spirals for a second, like Don said, about 2 times a night while I'm watching TV. Mm. Especially when Amazon started playing their commercials. But it would never answer back. Like, I think it would wake up and using a Shazam sort of thing, it would recognize that it's its own commercial and it would just go back to sleep. So it would just for a second and go down. But it never actually answers back to TV.
Right. It absolutely does that all the time. And I think because if it knows that it's only hearing background noise or something like that, it will just shut itself down. But it's still going off.
Deep Pan in the chat room says, calling a woman by the wrong name ends well every time, of course.
And so I think another thing about that light going off, though, that was another thing that was, you know, for everybody here, like, why is it going on and why is it listening? That's that whole creepy factor.
Yeah, okay. It's not a creepy factor. It just thinks it's heard its name, that's all. That's take your tinfoil off, mate. You're not that bad.
Not for me.
Oh, right, it's
I'm a
family.
Technology person, but there's other people in the world that kind of don't like things listening to them, maybe.
Oh, so that means the family have got secrets from you, Adam.
Mm-hmm, ooh. Maybe.
We're worried that Amazon is going to tell Adam what we've bought for his birthday present. There we go. Now, normally, most weeks, that would be the entire Apple News dealt with right there.
We got it.
But this week we're doing all right, actually. It's not too bad. 10.3 has been released. Beta 1 is out there. You can get it. You can have a go with it. It will screw your phone up right royal, says Doc, because it's done his. But there's a whole load of features coming for it. Find My AirPods is in there. Bastards, after they stole it away from the thing that's in the... that they took down the application for it the other week.
Yeah, my pick. They Sherlocked it.
Yeah, it's gone. And there's also some stuff coming for the beta on Mac OS as well. Night Shift's coming to the Mac platform. So have a chat with those. 10.3, though. Any thoughts, chaps? Have you had a go with it? Have you put it on? Doc, you said yours is screwed up.
No, sorry, I'm mistaken. Sorry, I just checked it. It was 10.2.1. I have this really weird thing where my LTE would just keep going into no service, And then if I airplane mode it real fast and put it back, it comes back on. And we're literally talking about at least once or twice an hour. So I went to the store and I swapped the phone. Maybe like 3 days ago, gave me a whole brand new phone and it still does it. So
Do you have a 7 or a 7 Plus?
7 Plus. And then so I'm thinking that there's something wrong in the OS that is causing it to have a hard time handing off between Wi-Fi and LTE back and forth. Because it literally, like, at first I thought it was just the phone had a bad radio. So after I got a whole brand new phone the other day, it still does the exact same thing. That leads me to believe that it's the OS.
Yeah, the reason I was asking you is because I have the 7, which I think has, I can never remember, I think it has the Intel Wi-Fi chip instead of the Qualcomm one, if I'm getting that right. And for sure, for me, it's constantly, with the cellular connection, dropping to 4G way more than my old phone did. And I'm convinced it's the baseband modem not being as good. Or that's my theory, at least. So
I'd have to check. You know, the new app, the apps that used to like scan your phone to tell you what you have in it, the 3 or 4 that I have, Lithium Info and some other 2 I have, like they don't work on 10 with the new phone. It shows up as unidentified. So I can't even check my charging current anymore. But I was told on this MacCast show that they had basically blocked that part of the API.
Yeah, I thought it was just simply the model. I thought the 7 had the Intel modem and the 7 Plus had the Qualcomm. That's why I was asking if you had a 7 or a 7 Plus. Anyway.
Windrider in the chat room says he's off betas completely, he's given up, but he suggests resetting the work network settings maybe, if that'll help.
Yeah. I tend to avoid the first, you know, release of a beta. When it gets around to 4, 5, 6, you know, release of that point release of beta, then I feel like it's safe. But anytime it's the you know, 0.1 version of that beta, there's going to be issues. And with 10.3, this seems like a major, like, feature update. There's, like, a lot of, like, features in here, as near as I can tell.
Seems to be a lot of features, but they're all fairly minor. I mean, the thing that put me off, I haven't put it on any of my kit, is the new file system. You know, that's a huge thing. If you're going to upgrade the file system underneath everything, it certainly wouldn't put it on my production machines, but I think I've got one spare device it could possibly go on, but even then I was a bit... And to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed, because with 9.3, we had those extra features for the iPad, and I was sort of hoping that they'd... because with 10, we didn't really get that much iPad-specific stuff. And I was sort of hoping that with 10.3, we would actually get some additional iPad stuff, you know, to just make it a bit more... Although it's getting there, but, you know, some more access to the file system, etc. Perhaps another release, 10.4 or 10.5, we might get that still.
Is AFFS, though, going to give an improved quality of service from the phone? Is it going to make it snappier or faster or anything?
Apparently, it has the potential to. Yeah, it has the potential to, because it's specifically designed for, you know, the latest fast memory, etc. So I think theoretically it should give you some performance boost. Whether or not that's going to be perceptible or not, because, you know, these latest phones are pretty quick anyway.
Yeah, you're not going to get any access to the file system at all over and above what you already had, though. It doesn't give you that.
No. Well, at least not this release anyway. They might have to bring the file system in first before they can sort of build on top of it, I suppose. Yeah,
you kind of got to build the engine before you build the stuff on top of it.
Yeah.
Find My AirPods is on there as well. They've had a play with it. I watched a video on Mac Rumors, and it seemed to work pretty well. They weren't having a problem with it, and I don't know how accurate it was in comparison to the application that you picked the other week that Apple then torched.
Does it actually do the location stuff? I thought it was like more of an audio feature where it like beeps out or cranks up the audio and plays some sort of, you know, like piercing sound or something that you can hear.
Plays the sound to locate the AirPods, but it doesn't work when the AirPods are in the case.
Right. And so the pick that I had actually was using the Bluetooth, I think, signal strength or something. I don't know how it did it. Yeah. But it would get you in the zone. And actually, a combination of the two would probably be the perfect thing, because the Bluetooth signal strength isn't good enough to really, you know, pinpoint. It gets you in the right area, so you know where to search, so you're not searching in the, you know, where you didn't drop them. But so I don't know.
I don't know if Apple did both or only the audio or what. Well, I had a look, and it gives you a map and shows you where it is on the map, and you can zoom the map in, but you can't get. I couldn't see that you could get the map to kind of like hotter, colder type level in your house or anything like that. Once you know it's in your house, you rely on the ping and nothing more.
Yeah. See, this thing within my house, the app, the Find My or AirPod Finder or whatever it was, would get me right into the area, you know, within maybe a, you know, 10-foot radius of where they were. So seems like that was a little bit better. And if Apple combined the two, that would be ideal, because that would get you, you know, a lot of people, I think, if you're going to lose them, what's going to happen is you're going to be taking off a piece of clothing or something. It's going to catch on that, you know, maybe putting up a hoodie, and then it's going to flip off and maybe bounce off somewhere. So I guess maybe, you know, you might already be in the area unless you do that and don't realize that it even fell out, which I think is something that Gruber described in an article where he was talking about, you know, what is really the likelihood that you're going to lose them. Did we talk about this here where I the only time I ever lose them is when I lose sort of the whole package? Like, I have them in the case and I've set the case down somewhere and I forget where it is, you know, similar to like my phone being missing. I've never actually had one like pop out when I'm exercising or anything and go like skipping off like people worry about.
Yeah, I'm the same, I must admit. I've never had one fall out of my ear, but also I'm extremely conscious all the time of where they are because, you know, they're so expensive.
Right.
It's, you know, you just don't leave them hanging around. You know, I know exactly where they are at any one time. Whether or not that novelty will wear off after a while, and, you know, I will mislay them. But I agree, I will, if I'm going to lose anything, I'm going to lose the whole package rather than just one of the earpods. Because they just, as soon as they come out your ear, they go straight into the case, and then they're nice and safe. So I have no issue with them, really.
So a tip that I, you know, what I've started to do is be conscious anytime I take them out, I put them in the case, and I am now using something I've never used in my entire life. But, you know, the little fifth pocket in your Levi jeans?
Oh, yeah.
I stick it in there. Now my only worry is I'm going to leave it in there and it's going to go through the wash. But
now, Steve Jobs would have designed like it perfect, so that it fitted in there, but no one else at Apple would.
The AirPods fit in there perfectly. It's like made for
Steve would have designed that, whereas it's pure chance that it does at the moment.
Yes. Yeah. But just a tip for anybody who's doing that. So then I always have the case with me. I always know where the case is. And anytime I take them out, I just make sure I pop them in there. Because the other way I could see people losing them is you take one out of your ear and you set it down somewhere and walk away.
Siri's being updated, Adam. Does that make you happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime Siri gets better, it's going to be good.
I love Siri. Siri's great.
God.
I'm not saying anything negative about Siri. I just refuse to, because it's...
You can say anything you want negative about Siri. It doesn't work for you, and I feel bad for you.
Oh, that's nice.
It makes me sad. I wish Siri worked better for you. Siri works great for me. I use it all the time.
It's good for when I want it to go on to do not disturb or something like that, and it's great if I want to set an alarm. Hey, Tim, set an alarm.
I use it for controlling the lights in my house. The light in my office, as a matter of fact.
I can't do that, but that's not Siri's fault. But the other stuff is... it's just simple stuff, like when you're out and you're like, navigate to, and it goes, here are some local cinemas.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, come on.
See, I'm one of those people who have stopped using Siri because it was so poor in the early days, and I suppose I should really give it another chance. But yeah, I just tend not to use it anymore. It's a shame. Very occasionally I might use it, but I certainly don't use it on a regular basis, which is a shame, really. I should do.
I use it a lot for texting when I'm in the car. Maps, you know, I'm not entirely convinced the map stuff is maybe Siri's fault all the time. I think Apple's got still some big issues with its underlying map data, and maybe just the integration between those two things because I have had navigation issues when you're trying to use Siri, but I've had navigation issues just when trying to like search for something in the Maps app, which is asinine. Like trying to find something, especially like go into Maps and try and find something that's in a location when you're getting ready to travel or you're preparing travel and you want to find, say, a restaurant that's in another state or another country or something like that. It's like just an exercise in futility.
Really? We'll give that a go.
Yeah, because it constantly wants to search just, off the GPS,
right,
like near you.
Which and you have to like
sort of move and put a pin. I don't know. I can't figure out how to do it. Maybe I just don't understand how to use Apple Maps.
There's a question in my head, and I think it's a sad thing for me to say, and I'm not having a pop here, but they're talking about Siri on desktop. Siri on desktop is functionless for me. I can't be bothered with it at all, and it won't be until they give me a keyword, a hot word, to get it moving.
I have a comment on that.
Go on.
So I don't use it either. Actually, as a matter of fact, I haven't even upgraded my office machine, my main machine, to Sierra yet. But the machine that my daughter uses is the second machine that I test stuff on. And so I had installed it on there. And I didn't even tell her. I didn't say anything to her. She discovered Siri on her own. And she came to me very excited. And she said, "I love it because I launch all my apps with it."
Really?
That's the killer feature for her. Wow. Yeah, because she just looking through the apps folder, or and I had shown her the trick of using Spotlight as a launcher, but she likes to just ask Siri to open stuff for her rather than having to search for it on her computer.
I'll use Alfred.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alfred.
I think we're conditioned to use Alfred now.
I think that's, yeah.
Bureau snuck in and whispered in everybody's ear.
Yeah. Anyway, I found that interesting because I'm with you, Ewan, and I don't know that I would use Siri on my Mac all that much. But there's another generation who discovered it on her own, and she was like, she's thrilled with it.
For
that one little feature, I mean, it sounds silly, and but it made a difference in her life enough for her to mention it to me. And she's not even really a technology person. My other daughter is. So I found that fascinating.
Of course, the solution to using Siri on the Mac, although, hands up, I don't actually use it very much. But with AirPods, it actually does make a big difference. So if you actually, you don't have to pair it, pairs automatically with your desktop. No, just a quick double tap on your AirPods.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
And that is a good way to use it. And it's sort of like with an external microphone, you always got to make sure your external microphone's switched on. You've got to have it in the right position, and it's a bit of an effort. But I find these AirPods to be comfortable enough to wear for prolonged periods of time, it really doesn't bother me at all. They're one of the most comfortable in-ear headphones I've ever used, and I can wear them for hours at a time, and even to some extent forget I'm actually wearing them. So I can see that's the direction that they're probably taking. If there was a trigger word, that would be even better, rather than having to tap them.
Did the AirPods fit you well, though, Don?
Yeah, I've never had a problem. Even the wired ones, I've never had a problem with them falling out. The only time the wired ones fall out is when I snag the cable. So the AirPods, they seem to stay in pretty much all the time.
No, they don't stay in at all for me.
Really? Don brings up something that I thought about, too. I think the AirPods are a big part of Apple's play for doing screenless voice interfaces. Yeah.
Definitely.
And so because of that, because we have the AirPods now, I think we'll all agree that a big area where Amazon and Alexa has this edge is that it doesn't have the screen to fall back on. So by definition, by design, Amazon had to build an interface that worked only for voice. And I think Apple got a little bit lazy because, when they ran into a problem or something didn't work, they could always just, let me give you a web page, or let me throw something up on the screen. I'm hoping some of the enhancements that are going to come into play now are that Apple, because you have things like the Apple Watch and AirPods, that Apple's going to be more focused on making sure Siri works with just a voice response.
And I think they're
probably
careful.
I think if they can do that, it'll get a lot better.
I think the reputation of Siri may exceed its functionality if you're not careful, and that's the trouble, is that once it gets a reputation for being shit, it's always going to be shit in everyone's mind. Even if it's good, it's still going to be shit in everyone's mind.
I think it suffers from that now, actually.
Yeah.
I think most, if you ask most people, they really won't give you the time of day for Siri. Although Amazon's great because it always seems to work. You know, the Alexa always seems to work. So
I think
it's probably got a huge edge on PR and on just how people feel about the technology.
Yeah, no, sure.
I think one of the things that happens too with the Echo is, well, Amazon, you know, Alexa in general, is many people, you know, hit the Amazon site a couple times a week just to buy something. And then, so it's always popping up there. There's tons of, they're advertising like crazy on the various TV shows and stuff like that. And then also, if you walk into the Target to buy more, the Walmarts, the, you know, Tesco's, wherever it is, you see the display and you see the devices over and over again. And I thought it was funny because yesterday my dad was in my area and then he was, you know, watching me interact with Alexa. I was basically just changing music while I was working. And he was like, oh, I want to see if it could understand me with my sort of Korean accent. And I was like, yeah, go for it. And he's saying stuff to it and then answered him. And so for him, he was shocked because Siri never answers him. Siri doesn't understand when he says, I'm trying to find someone in the painting business. But Echo understood that, you know? And then so he was, oh, maybe I can use this to try to fix my English. And I was like, I find that funny because you're 71. You're not going to fix your English, bro. It's too late. But yeah, go for it. So we went to Best Buy and bought him one.
It's never too late.
I'm curious to see. Huh?
It's never too late.
It was a joke.
A-E-I-O-U.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And so I did, though, yesterday try asking it to, like, you know, find me Japanese and Korean, you know, like NPR-style programs and whatnot. And it was able to do so because of TuneIn. So, I mean, it does have some great features, but, you know, I have to definitely agree that with Siri on the Mac, which I only play with it for like a week and I'm like, I'm over it. It doesn't enthrall me. Don's absolutely right, though. It definitely works better with the AirBuds pods. Blah. I don't know why I would always say AirBuds, which is a dog movie with basketball. But yeah, and Don, as far as the comfort, for the last three shows, this is my monitors. Like, I literally mm-hmm. use them and mm-hmm. I get up and I leave with them still in. And I'm like, wait. I have these things still in my ear. I'm standing, you know, walking down the street, going back to my apartment. So
on the
they're really comfortable.
On the subject of Fit chat rooms weighed in, Bob Beach says that he used Siri on his watch all the time. Windrider says that his preferred launch is launch app is Launchpad. And he's also saying that the AirPods only stay into his ears if he puts them in upside down. And you said, Adam, that Michael Johnson said the same thing. Yeah. Well, no, because I can fit them in. Because I fit my ears. These don't work because they're green. You can see them here. But I always hang them over my ears like monitor earphones and shove them in. And they're fine. They're great. They stay in perfectly. And it's the same with the AirPods. AirPods fit over the top and stay in, but they won't work in the right way around. They just fall out. I've got horrible V ear. Because I think that's where the AirPods are supposed to sit, in that V in the bottom of your peena there, but they're they don't sit well.
You have to wonder whether or not they'll bring out sort of different sizes. I don't know if it's going to be too problematic because people have different ears. But
yeah. Well, my wife, she can't actually put the AirPods in at all. They're too they're too big for the hole in her peena. That's.
Tried to let it go. You laughed.
She is, good job she never listens to this shit. Otherwise, she'd probably divorce me. But everyone's going, oh, Ewan's wife's got a small peener. I thought it was just Ewan that had the small peener.
Yeah.
Jake, you were born in 1994.
Why does that surprise you?
Jesus Christ, I'm old. I've got Jake here who's committing to work with me. But he's born in, he's just noted his name in the chat room, Jake 94. And it's just like, 94? Christ, I was only 3 years away from getting married at that point.
Wow, Bronwyn graduated high school in 94.
In 94.
That was 10 years after I graduated high school. Or before, actually, they just gave me the paper and told me to saw it off.
Yeah. Deep Pan also wants Ewan's wife has a small peener to be the show title. Yeah,
that's the name of that little crook in your ear.
No, the peener is the whole fleshy bit.
Oh,
definitely.
See, you learn anatomy here on.
I am. I'm pretty good actually with anatomy. I'm not too bad. That's, yeah. No, that came out wrong as well.
With the earpods upside down.
Oh, Christ. Moving on. Night Shift is coming to OS 10 Sierra. 10.2.4, allegedly. I've got to say I'm not in favour of that, but it can be switched off, I guess. So yep. we have got a screenshot here of the settings bit where you can turn it off.
And well, anybody who cares about colour.
Well, exactly. Like. That's my problem. And the thing that, here's my thought process. Okay, so don't. I'm not being totally irrational here. If I buy a calibrated profile, or buy a calibrator, and I create a calibrated profile for my monitors, if I then adjust the monitor, I have to recalibrate because it, by nature, adjusts the profile. So I'm wondering how Night Shift works and whether if you've got a calibrated monitor, whether it screws up your calibration. So effectively, you've got to calibrate every day if you're not careful.
Well, it depends on how much they screwed up because I used to use Flux for the longest time. And I always calibrated my monitors, but like, Adam was saying right before I would go into Lightroom or go into Final Cut or Premiere or whatever, is you just switch it off and then it goes back to normal over the course of about 3 or 4 seconds and then you can do your thing and then when you're done you can switch it back on. And the reason why I used to use it is just at staring at the screen for long periods of time would just drive me batty, especially in an environment where I had no control over my lights and everything was fluorescent. It was just absolutely disgusting. Like my head would just be killing me. When I started using Flux, it could be, what's the word I'm looking for? What is it when you drink the fake pill but it doesn't do it? It could be a placebo or not, but I swear my headaches went away as soon as I turned off, you know, that heavily bluish-looking screen and started having it fade according to the sunset. So I used Flux probably for like 4 or 5 years or so before it became just part of the OS on the phone. And on the phone, Night Shift pisses me off because I forget sometimes and I post stuff to Instagram and I look at the picture the next day and I'm like, yo, you actually posted that? And I thought I was adjusting all the colors, but, you know, those are normally the pics from the bar where I forgot to switch it off before I did an Instagram. So it's kind of a punk switching it on and off. I think that it should be app specific. So if you open a particular app, it should know to shut it off for that app. And then when you close that app, switch it back on. That's a little bit easier.
To answer your question, Ewan, I don't think it would mess up the calibration, and here's why. Because it's my understanding of how the technology works is that it's using the GPU and the filter system that's built into the operating system. And the reason I believe it's doing that is because with Night Shift on the iPhone, you can't use it in low power mode. So I think it's actually like a software hack that is just running filters basically on the live, you know, video feed that's going out to your monitor. So it's just doing like a filter pass in real time. So I don't think it's actually messing with any underlying settings or anything like that. I think it's just applying a color shift.
We're way outside any kind of competence that I have here at all. But my understanding is that your monitor profile is your computer telling your monitor what to display. So if your computer is telling your monitor to display something completely different, then it's either got to have a different profile that it's then using, or it's altering the profile that you've created, which is calibrated and set. And if you alter that calibrated profile, then you have to recalibrate. Is my understanding, and I'm glad to be wrong, because I'd rather use it, to be honest, because I sit in front of the TV at night editing stuff, and a lot of the stuff that I do at night in front of the TV isn't color critical. It's just chopping up footage. I don't give a shit what it looks like because it's already, you know, been, I've exposed it reasonably well on site anyway. So, but photos, there's no way I'd do photos on a monitor that could be shifted in color because that would just be horrific.
Yeah. Well, so the way Flux works, it's not taking that profile and tweaking it. It's actually, you know, putting another layer of color correction on top of that. Already calibrated profile would be my assumption.
The color profile is actually a text file. Way back when Apple used to call it Color Sync, like I literally did that for printing agencies here. I would run around and do the Great Tag Macbeth colorimeter and you had a touch target on the thing, you would either use a Kodak profile or one of the other various profiles related to their Heidelbergs. And so we would send them a file, like an Apple specified color sync file and an Adobe specified color sync file. We would print it off on a Heidelberg, put it on the gray tag, and you adjust it. Well, those settings were then saved into a text file, and ColorSync basically read that text file. So whenever you were ready to print something, you could literally just, you know, go into the ColorSync setting and say, you know, read the latest calibration from X date, and your system would switch to that. And then, so you could switch it back and forth very easily. So I don't think that they would modify the underlying text file. And I'm assuming ColorSync still works primarily the same way as far as reading the settings. And so I guarantee if you dig into your system folder, it probably still names ColorSync. God knows what they call it now, but it's probably in there still under the core, whatever system still labeled as ColorSync profile.
I believe it's just like an XML file or something.
I'm looking up right now.
Yeah, but don't forget, you're supposed to be calibrating on a weekly basis, because otherwise you're going to get slippage anyway. It'll have slipped so far that you won't notice. So you should be giving. So that's the. I don't know. There's something. So if anyone knows, we're always willing to be educated, because we're not. But my understanding is that use by nature causes slippage. So
I really like Don's idea about if Night Shift is going to be on the Mac, developers of specific apps being able to like disable it when you launch that app. Like, it'd be great if Adobe had access to the API and said, "Look, when they're launching Photoshop, make sure Night Shift isn't being applied."
Yeah.
I think that would be a smart thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If it's app specific, that fixes it. I mean, that is perfect.
I think it's probably okay, because Apple is sensitive to that kind of stuff, and they probably would have considered this. So I'm not suggesting it's not, but it's one of the concerns that have popped into my head with Night Shift, although I do accept the fact that I spend so long looking at screens that macular degeneration is probably an occupational hazard that I'm driving headlong into. So,
well, actually, it's funny, we're discussing this for the first time for a while, that I realized that I've actually switched it off on all my devices. I don't use it anymore. Yep. When it first came out, I switched it on and I was using it, but just thinking about it now, it's not on my phone, it's not on either of my iPads either, so nice to have, but I don't actually use it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's some question about the science behind it, too. Mm. I mean, if you go out and do some research on the whole, what's that thing they say, it messes with your...
blue light perception.
Whatever cycles, you know, your sleep cycles or whatever. Mm-hmm. I forget the term for it. But anyway, there's some
circadian rhythms.
Circadian rhythms.
Well, hey. Yes. You got it. So there is some question on whether or not LCDs mess with that or not. There's debate. So,
yeah, in terms of the physiological damage, if you talk to Mark from Hoyer, he'll tell you that the jury's still out on it, and he sent a couple of papers over to Doc, I know. So,
well, they're at pains to state on the setup screen that it may help. They don't say it will help. It may help your getting better sleep. So
that's the same thing that the vitamin salesmen say when they sell you an $80 bottle of something B complex.
So I it may work for some people. It might not work for others. It's, you know, there could be all kinds of physiological, you know, things to it. I haven't done any of the research. I just know that I've read articles. Well,
macular degeneration is real
on both sides. So
yeah, macular degeneration is real. And it gets to the point that it's so bad that you can't actually read text and stuff like that. So it's what causes it. So that's the jury's out on. Theater mode.
Windrider.
Go on.
I was going to tell Windrider. Brazilian guys tell that to Brazilian women on a daily basis.
Apparently, eating 2 Brazil nuts per day will reduce the likelihood of macular degeneration.
Give you radioactive poisoning, though.
I don't know whether I want... I'm not keen on Brazil nuts, I have to say. I do think it's like chewing a lump of wood.
Rubbish.
Which it is wood, I kind of guess, but that's... theatre mode is coming to Apple Watch. Apparently, if you go into movie theatres, this is a quick and easy way to mute the sound and disable the raise-to-wake functionality on your light with the arm movement. The theater mode enabled, customers will still receive haptic feedback from each incoming notification, and they can be viewed by tapping the screen or pressing down on the digital crown.
Good idea.
Waste of time.
Oh, rubbish.
Go on.
I couldn't understand why you were laughing. I think that's a brilliant feature. Because, I mean, I don't go to the cinema that often, but last time when I went to see Rogue One, I was conscious of the fact that my watch kept lighting up every 5 minutes every time I moved my hand. So that would be a fantastic addition to the watch.
I applaud you, Don, because I think that's very kind and considerate of you, considering you probably own the theatre. But I've never seen a movie that's been ruined by someone's watches lighting up at random.
I'm kind of with you, Ewan. I've noticed it at the cinema, even with people's phones. even when people lift up their phones, it doesn't really bother me that much.
I wasn't worried about it bothering other people. It was bothering me. My own watch was bothering me. That will remove that. I mean, it wasn't too, you know.
Oh, no, I totally get it now. If you're saying this is a selfish feature, yes, of course.
Of course.
Totally makes sense.
Wait, you know what it is, though? For many people, your ability for your eye to go from light to dark changes over time, and then some people are more sensitive than others.
It's your tubes, isn't it?
I used to adjust really, really quick, and now I don't adjust so quick, and I'm assuming that has to do with putting a 5 in front of my age. I can see how it can bother certain folks that if you have a slow iris, like if you're working off of a Canon instead of a Nikon eyes, Sony eyes rather, then yeah, it bothers you. Like, so I kind of agree with Don. I never really worry about it bothering other people, but my screen is relatively bright, so I hate when my screen comes on in the theater, so I normally stick it under my thigh. But it's just... Why is that funny?
Stick what under your thigh?
My phone. I don't want it in my pocket in case something does come up. I want to be able to, like, take a quick peek at it. But by having it under my thigh, I can kind of look at it and block the brightness from bothering other people, just in case, you know. But, yeah, this is even when I drive my car, my phone is under my thigh. It's a place where I've been sticking my phone forever. Sorry. Shoot me.
Tuck it under your thigh, guys.
I'm not the only one because I've seen other people do it. That's where I got the idea.
Keep it down. You don't want to be peeking at that thing.
Okay. That's cool. But we got more out of that than I thought we were going to have to say.
Everyone thinks you have glowing balls.
That's why you got no kids.
Possible.
You've got your phone underneath your nads, mate, and
they're irradiated.
Yeah, you're gonna go to the theatre, and everyone's gonna complain about your nads glowing and ruining the film rather than your watch.
I got those shot off in Kuwait. We're square.
I'm desperate to find a different title because Ewan's wife's got a small peener at the moment. It's going to get me divorced. Favorite. I need Doc's glowing nads as the title instead. GameStop and the Apple authorized dealer Simply Mac stuff is this has been rumbling around for about a week now, and there's a story that's come out yesterday. So basically, Simply Mac are closing a whole pile of stores in the US, and they're a premium reseller for Apple. Mm-hmm. But the guy's come out today and he's intimated that basically Apple are being a bunch of wankers and they're squeezing him on I'm slowly being strangled, unquote, and the margins with free labor demands are killing him.
Mm-hmm.
Discuss.
No comment.
I don't know.
Is anyone surprised?
What do we want to discuss? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I can't see that. I mean, Apple's got such a large chain of stores now. Why would it give? Because it was reliant on resellers before. I mean,
correct.
15 years ago, even the reseller market would probably, you know, there was no reach without it. But there's a bit of me's kind of, oh, that's a shame. And then there's a bit of me's like, well, what do you expect? Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. Like, part of me is like, yeah, that's a shame. But the other, as you watch the company growing, if you're the reseller and you see the company growing and growing and opening stores on a number of like 5 to 6 a week at one point, the writing was on the wall that your days were numbered. It's just like, you know, how a mom feels when her kids stop needing her the way that they used to need her and they, you know, grow up. And then there's that one moment where she realizes, hey, You know, now I guess I'm in, you know, the different phase of momhood. I think the retailer should have had that same thought.
I think you're right, Don. But then there's always weird things, too. Like, now if you go search Apple's support site, if you're looking for, if you're going through the wizard to get your, like, iPhone repaired or your Mac fixed, just, I think this was a couple months ago, they added the resellers to that search. So if I'm searching to see where I can get my phone repaired, my local Apple authorized reseller now comes up right next to the Apple store in terms of a location. And so if my Apple store, I can't get an appointment, it's offering me, you know, other locations. So Apple's always kind of, yeah, they've been doing this and the writing's on the wall, but they also have been doing things that I think sometimes give these guys a little bit of hope that, you know, maybe they aren't being pushed out. And I know that my local reseller, too, a lot of people, the Apple stores will tell the, you know, people come in, hey, we don't have an appointment for you, but you might try these guys. So sometimes there's mixed signals going across, too. But I think anybody, you know, if you step away from being that close to it, yeah, it was kind of obvious that this is what was going to happen. As Deep Pan put, Apple, you know, Apple resellers are being Sherlocked as well.
Well, I mean, Apple resellers wasn't really a UK thing. We only had about 3 stores in the whole world, or the whole country that could service up until Apple started out. There's an interesting story here, though, that MacMedix, which is a similar kind of thing, has issued an official statement and agreed to interview. And they said, we're doing really well. We've expanded. We've opened new pure location, retail location stores. Apple have given us great support and guidance, said Dana Stebolt, president of MacMedix. We're very encouraged by the upward trends over the last year. And in fact, we're hiring more staff for all locations, both in-lab and on-site.
Sure.
Well, you know that, why? That says that, you know, simply they, Mac person. Sorry. Go ahead,
Adam. I was just going to say they do that because here's the thing. What Simply Mac is saying, it's my understanding that's very accurate. Apple is very controlling over these guys, and they monitor and control what they do very, very tightly. And just like everything with Apple, if you piss Apple off, guess what happens? So, you know, coming out publicly and saying, oh, yeah, our relationship with Apple is great. Everything is wonderful. They're a great company. We love working with them. That,
well,
keeps,
they could say no comment,
nice,
though, as well.
Good.
They could say no comment as well, couldn't they?
Yeah,
so that's what I'm saying. So that also tells me, well, you know what it is, Adam? There's people perceive things in a very different route, right? And it really just depends on who that person is. So Apple could come out and say, this is the new policy going forward. Yes, we're going to ask you on the, say, we're going to ask you on in this particular situation, take care of these small repairs and do them for free under customer service. And then, you know, don't charge people for it. There won't be a chargeback per se, but it's a really easy fix. If you guys could just take care of it, we'll figure it out later. And then some people will take it as, oh, cool, you know, we got it. And other people take it as, oh, my God, Apple's squeezing me again, making me do free labor. And then so, how you perceive that request, and it could be something super simple. We really don't know what the true details are, but you can see how some people would freak out over that. And I put that out there because, you know, when I was working in the jeans bar, there were certain repairs that we would do that people would always be mind blown that were absolutely free. And they were like, really? There's no charge? I was like, no, we just eat that. You know, we got it, no problem. And, you know, other people would freak out when they bring in their 10-year-old machine and you need to change something and you tell them that there's like a $75 labor charge, they would like lose their mind because they think it's supposed to be free. And so we really, it's probably just a perception and personality switch, you know, and if that guy was doing something he wasn't supposed to do, trust me, Apple's going to squeeze him. So it's easy for him to turn around and say, hey, Apple's, you know, being rude to me, but we don't know what the procuring cause is.
I still think there's a potential for resellers or a reseller type, you know, outfit to do well, because whenever I go to the Apple store or have dealings with the Apple store, I still think they're very much geared up to the individual. I know that, you know, most Apple stores have a business unit, but I've never really, although I know the guys in the business unit in my local Apple store. Again, I think you'd probably get more personal service going to a reseller, especially if you're a shop or something, or if you've got, you know, multiple Macs that you want to have personal service on and set up perhaps bespoke support arrangements, etc. I still think there's potentially that sort of work would be more best with resellers than with Apple themselves and the Apple store.
Yeah, no.
definitely. That's, when we were at Apple, like in my area.
The key was that you had to be a VAR. You couldn't just be a reseller. And at some point, I don't know if Apple went away from that, but when we had our electronics store, we were considered a VAR because of my dad's specialism in audio video. So we handled all the television and radio and ad agencies and stuff like that, because it wasn't just selling them a Mac Pro. It was selling them a Mac Pro and knowing how to set it up to work with DigiBeta and D2 and some of the other various high-end video formats. So I agree with Don, you know, in that whole sort of bespoke option. If you are a value-added reseller and you're not just, hey, take this kid, get out, I made money, then Apple needs those guys. But if you're just, you know, moving boxes on their behalf, they may not need you anymore.
I had joint venture for a year, and I really enjoyed that. I thought it was great, really good service. And the thing is, as well, you get 10 people listed on for your organization for one joint venture account. So, I mean, what we ought to do is have a BTN joint venture and just have 10.
Didn't they kill that program?
Did they kill joint venture? Because that was really cool. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. You go in there and you just like, I'm joint venture, and they go, okay, you're next.
I thought that meant grabbing a spliff and walking into the woods.
No. It was great. I'm gonna, if they haven't replaced joint venture, I'm going to see what there is, because the business suppliers would be really good.
Oh, it looks like the page might still be there.
See if it's still running. You see, you're only going to get, it was 350 quid, but if 10 of you put in 35 quid, it means all of you get access to Instant Genius Bar appointments. You just walk in and it's done. It's great. We should look at that. We should have a BTN joint venture. We'll that's after the show. I'm going to start that. Last story then. I think this is quite an interesting one. SetApp is coming for Mac. This is a there's been a beta testing appearing of it, but SetApp actually appears today. It's a collection of Mac apps that are available to users for a low monthly fee. It is $9.99 a month. SetApp is designed to be an alternative to the Mac App Store through the SetApp service. At the moment, it's carrying things like Rapid Weaver, Clean My Mac, Ulysses, Bloggo, Code Runner, Pixar, Focused, iMazing, Marked Screens, Pagico, etc.
That was my pick like four shows ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it's out of beta now, isn't it? It's a full-blown service as of today.
You can get it.
Is it? I don't know if it's worldwide, though, is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
No, it is.
Cool. Do you see this really flying then, or is it?
I love it. I love it. It's so weird. It's something that I probably would have poo-pooed before, because I was so into Mac Heist and all these other bundles just for the sake of playing the games, honestly. But the reason why I love it is I have been using, an FTP app that for whatever reason had gone buggy. And my client called me and was like, I need an emergency fix to the website. And for whatever reason, I couldn't get my FTP app to run. I had SetApp on here. So I just double-clicked on Yummy FTP. It downloaded in seconds. Boom, I was able to upload it, and it worked. And I go, wow, that was cool. So it kind of went away. Literally the very next day, I had a reason to use Screens. And I ended up being able to just open up Screens and use it. So there, except for Ulysses or maybe Marked, Jump Desktop, I don't see there's things that you would use almost every single day. But it's like having a really cool kit of tools whenever you're ready. And then since that time, they've added great stuff like iThoughts HD and what something else they added recently, Task Paper, which I already use. But I just think that it's a really cool way to introduce people to using more than just regular apps. And it's inexpensive, because if you added up the apps that I just spoke of, I would have been well over $250. So that's almost a year and a half maybe of this.
Well, it is subscription though, don't forget.
Correct.
Yeah.
So yeah,
but you're talking $120 a year, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's a good point.
Which sounds like a lot until you realize each person has to look and you have to see what's in here and what apps you might use. But if you use apps or you buy apps that sort of add up to anywhere close to that, Doc hit the right point. The thing about having this for me. It's been exactly what he described. It's like, I use Marked, I use iStat Menu, I use Clean My Mac, all these things I've paid for. And when they have upgrades, I pay for the upgrades or whatever. So I'm probably spending close to the amount just doing the standard upgrades for all these apps. But then on top of it, you get these sort of side apps like, oh yeah, I'd like to try that. Or, hey, I could use that right now, but maybe I wouldn't have paid for it. originally. So I'm getting a high quality utility that I'm maybe using a few times a year that I may would have maybe would have looked for an alternative, a free alternative or something I didn't have to pay for, because I go, well, I, you know, I'm only going to use that 2 times a year, so I don't want to pay $10 for that or $15 for that. But boom, now you just have it. So you launch it, you use it, and you put it away until the next time you need it. And they've been pretty good about continuing to add apps to this library. So it's like having, you know, a library card almost for applications.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny that Doc should mention Mark, because I was looking for Mark before because I wanted to run it. And I was going to go, I bought Mark in the past, so I was going to go to the website and download it, etc. But and I just didn't get around to it. With you mentioning that, I've actually got SetApp on my machine. I've just looked. I didn't even know Marked was in there, so I've just run it from SetApp, and I've got it now, so it's great. I mean, I've been part of the beta, and I think it's... I know a lot of people really struggle with the subscription model. People just really, really hate it, and we all saw what happened with Text Expander when that sort of went subscription. Text Expander isn't included in this, but, you know, people have a knee-jerk reaction to seeing subscription-based products. But, I mean, you get 60 apps... And unlike some, you know, when you buy some of these cheap bundles, you might get 2 or 3 apps that are really good and then 10 apps, which either you've never heard of or you run them up and you think, well, I'm never ever going to run that again. All the apps that I've sort of checked out within SetApp have all been pretty good apps, you know, pretty top flight apps as well. So, yeah, it's there's a good analogy there to the library card that Adam said. You know, it's just nice to have it there. It might be expensive for some people. But for like $10 a month, you've got access to this library of 60 apps that you can call on as and when you need it. And
that will change and evolve.
They'll be adding additional apps. They grow fast. Yeah, and it's quite a nice surprise to see them when, you know, when a new app does appear, which app it is that they've selected and put in. So.
Well, I thought it was in there, and that's a friggin' expensive app. Chat room's chiming in already. Windrider, Bob Beach, and Hobbs have all said the same thing. The only problem I've got looking at SetApp is that I own most of those apps that interest me already anyway. So
right, but now think about upgrading those apps in the future. Yeah. And so here, you know, by paying the subscription, you have access to all those and to any future upgrades and updates that you're not going to be paying for. So that's, you know, you got to offset that money. The other thing that I'll point out about this, because I was more worried about the developer side of it, and I talked to some of the developers who decided to participate in this thing, and they're all very happy and excited about it, because a lot of them kind of see it as, look, I don't know that it would have been good for the community if, you know, a lot of these companies, like Don pointed out, are thinking about and moving to a subscription model. So imagine if each one of these apps decided, oh, I want to charge $1 or $2 a month for, you know, my app. And suddenly you're managing now all of these subscription-based things, right? Mm. All these little micro subscriptions. So by bundling them all together, this allows a lot of the smaller developers to move to a subscription-based model in a way that kind of makes sense. You know, it would have been hard for some of these apps to kind of go subscription, but now they have the ability to get recurring revenue. That's going to help them develop new updates and make sure that, you know, they can survive to continue supporting these apps. So, you know, there's that positive side of it too. So you're not getting stuck paying, you know, $4.99 here and $2.99 for that one and $1.99 for that one. Now you pay one price, you're getting access to all of it, and you don't have to use all of it. You know, a lot of people look at this and go, well, I don't care about, you know, this app in here. But what's great about it too is you don't have to. You look at it and you go, okay, here's 10 apps in here that I know I'm going to use. I maybe not won't use these 5 that frequently, but I have access to them. And then plus, next time I maybe need a tool for, you know, opening SQLite database. Well, look, oh, Base is in here. That's a great app for that. And that's another one that I bought because I needed it at one time and I used it once and then, you know, have probably never launched it again. But yeah. I know I'll need it again at some point and now I have access to it. So
it's a similar model to Screencast Online, you know, because I have a subscription service. We publish 2 videos a week. It's not intended that everybody watches every single video, but, you know, when you have the subscription, you've got access to the library. Yeah, and when you do buy that piece of software or you have a piece of software that you want some, you know, information on or how to use it, you can just go straight ahead and dip into the library. You don't have to, you know, purchase a single video tutorial. You've got access to the complete library. It is extremely convenient, you know, providing that it's priced correctly.
Yeah, it's on-demand software. So think about how many times maybe you've gone into the App Store and bought that little $1.99 or $2.99 utility and only used it once.
Yeah.
And now you could take that same $2 investment and put it towards, you know, the aggregate of this, and you have consistent access to anything that's in this library, whether you want to use it or not.
Apple's got to have one. You know what
the funny thing for me, honestly, with, let's say, Clean My Mac alone, right? Because that's probably maybe the flagship app in there. I don't want to, you know, parlay anybody else's app because there are some other
Ulysses
great things in here.
Ulysses is another big
one. But yeah, okay, Ulysses is another. Ulysses is what, 30 bucks on the...
I thought it's on the, 50 bucks.
And yeah. I thought too. But okay, so Clean My Mac alone. If Philippe and those guys over there said, hey, we're going to switch to a subscription model and Clean My Mac is going to be 10 bucks a month, I swear to you, I'd pay 10 bucks a month for that alone. Mm. If you own an SSD-based machine where you really cannot afford to be filling it up all the time, you don't can't be as willy-nilly as you used to be because you're down to a 500 gig drive or a 256 gig drive, that alone is worth the entire cost of the entire process. It keeps everything clean. It makes uninstall super easy. It makes it real easy to go in and find the large files that, you know, you need to throw away because you forgot that you recorded, you know, all of those junk videos from Christmas and they're sitting on your hard drive taking up space. That alone would be worth it. Being able to have access to all the rest of this stuff just really, really, really puts it over the top. And I think also it's just hard with the subscription thing, and I get it, but I remember when I was working at the Apple Store, how I originally found Don is I was a Screencast Online member, and it wasn't because I was learning his tutorials to learn how to use apps I didn't know how to use. Most of the stuff I knew, but it was great that when a customer would come in, I'd be able to recommend them a particular app because I saw something that, you know, Don would find in the deepest corners of the App Store. You know, at that time, they were really just websites, but he would find an app. And I'd be like, oh my God, that app is great. You know, I found out about 1Password through Don. I found out about probably the major apps I use on a daily basis I learned through Screencast Online. And being able to share that with the community or find these tools for people and then send them to someplace where they can learn how to use it was also incredible. So I think we just have to work on, as the tech guys, teaching people that subscription isn't necessarily bad. What I've found so far, because it's great for clicks, most of the tech guys go and scream loudly because people want to read those articles, and they're not really doing the business a favor.
Apple have got to be keeping an eye on this because, I mean, I know it's tiny and it doesn't mean anything in terms of global income to them, but the model, if the model starts to expand, that gives them significant problems.
Well,
a lot of this kid is in the App Store.
Yeah.
Again, my biggest thing is I hope this really works for developers. Mm-hmm. But again, I talked to a number of the developers who went into this and they went in sort of eyes open and they see it as a pretty positive opportunity.
So I used to promote, you know, a lot of the bundles, the Mac heist and stuff, and people used to push back saying, well, what about the developers? What about the developers? But as you say, they go in with their eyes wide open. No one's trying to pull a fast one on the developers. They know exactly, you know, what they're letting themselves in for. And more often than, well, I would think in all cases, they're not going to do it if it's going to be damaging to them or to their business. I still don't know what happens I'm presuming if you actually stop your subscription with SetApp, those applications that you've been using will just stop working. I don't know also what happens if a developer decides to pull their application from the subscription. Presumably they still have that veto, so if things aren't working out for them, they can actually pull their app. I don't know. I'd have to have a look in the terms and conditions to see how that would affect people.
Good stuff. We've had some reviews. Thank you to those people who bothered to leave reviews for us. It makes a world of difference. We read a couple the other week. We've had one from Ian who talking about the news show, who says tech news shouldn't be this much fun. Tech news to the point in an easily digestible 5-minute podcast with Kyle. And his quirky take on the tech news of the day. Thank you. And also, first podcast of the day from TJC in Canada. And he loves the news show as well. Unfortunately, G-Dot doesn't love the Mac show anymore. He says we've gone off the boil. There we go. I finally unsubscribed. He's obviously been listening for a while, but this is the first review he's ever given us. Thanks, mate. Was better in the past, but these days it's full of uninformed and self-opinionated tripe. To be fair to him, we've never suggested that we were well-informed, so I think that might not be fair, but the self-opinionated bit I'll go with. Couldn't agree with me more on that. And the guests are sometimes good, but the main presenter often doesn't give them a chance. Bye-bye.
Nah.
I had, because someone wrote a review similar to this about a year ago, and I went through three of the podcasts, and I actually timed how much I speak compared to everyone else. And as long as I'm not drunk, I noticed that actually I talk very little. But I do concede that on the podcasts where I'm pissed, I may have more opinion than I should. So... I have reformed about, I'm not drunk on the podcast anymore. I've made a point. I'm not doing it, honest. Thank you for leaving a review. We do appreciate the fact you did it, even though you only gave us 2 stars. And if anyone would like to make sure that's not the last review that someone comes across, that would be really cool. Cheers. We have got some sponsors. UK2, of course, are our sponsor. If you can, please, please, please write to them somehow and just say thanks for supporting British Tech, because without them, we really would be totally lost. They pick up all the bandwidth. They give us the server space. We have got every show we have ever produced going back into the bagel days right on the server. You can watch it on the NQL channel, or you can scroll back through all of the feeds and you can find the original feed and watch it thanks to UK2. Send a tweet out to @UK2 that says thanks for supporting at British Tech. We would really appreciate if you could support them. And you get tons off your web services as well. Domain names, 20% off. You can get 50 quid off of VPS, VPN. You can get co-location services, and you'll get discounts on all of those services as well. And they are with us for the next 7 years, guaranteed. So thanks to UK2, and please support them. And also Hoya, it is getting close. It is Uniku time. I will be getting my face measured, which, according to some of you that write in, will take a fair old while based on the size of my head. But I will get a custom-made pair of glasses that will fit no one else but me.
Mm.
I am so excited about this. We'll have video cameras there when it happens, wide angle, obviously. And we'll video the whole process about how it happens and what happens and the glasses being cut and made in the 3D printery thing. And it will be awesome. And if you do, you think, well, okay, I can't wait for the Uniku frame stuff. I just want the Avantic lenses like you're currently wearing, Ewan. Then go to Hoya and hoya.co.uk, and you can check out all of their local locations. Write to podcast@hoya.co.uk as well, and they will tell you where your local location is, and they'll arrange for one of the reps to be there to help with the fitting process and everything. And I'm amazed. There's a few people have written in over Christmas going, oh, I just wanted to let you know, thanks for the podcast, and I had my Hoya glasses delivered today. They were absolutely brilliant. And I forwarded those on to Mark at Hoya. And he's like, well, hey, great, but why didn't these people tell us they were doing it? If you want Hoya stuff, get Hoya involved, and they will be there to make sure that the process is absolutely tailored and smooth as silk. That's what they want. They want a whole pile of BTN salespeople out there saying Hoya lenses are fantastic. And Mark's grateful, don't get me wrong. He's dead happy that you guys have all bought lenses, but you will get even better support because you're a BTN listener. This is way above and beyond. Yeah? Check them out. Right, time for the cool thing. Don, start us off with your cool thingy.
Okay, I don't know if this has been covered before. It might very well have, but it sort of harks back to the subscription. I'm a big Ulysses fan. I use Ulysses all the time. But my attention has been brought to another editing app called Bear. I don't know if anybody's been using it or if it's come up before. It's a free app. It's an iOS app, and it's also a Mac app. And it's free, but if you subscribe to the service, you then get syncing and a few other extra features between the platforms. So I've tried it out this week, actually, and I'm very impressed. It's a very well put together app, some nice functionality in there, some clever use of tags and sort of hashtags and things, some clever things you can do. Very, very elegant. And I'm going to give it a try, see what I think of it. But if you do want to go down the pro route, you have to subscribe, which is going to put a lot of people off. You can either subscribe on a monthly basis, it's £1.29, or you can get a year's worth for £13.99. And this harks back to, you know, the setup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite interesting to see how one particular vendor is actually doing it off on their own, see how successful they are. But the nice thing is, because it's a subscription through the Mac App Store, you can actually, when you sign up, as I said, the app is free, so you can use it forever without the sync. But obviously, if you've got iPads and iPhones and Macs, you're going to want to sync, so you go for the subscription. You can actually get a month's free subscription. So it's basically a month's free trial. And then if you don't like it after using it for a month, you can actually cancel the subscription and you don't have to pay anything. But I like it. I've been trying it for a couple of days now. It's very, very elegant. It's very easy to use. And it's got some hidden features, some hidden power in there, which I'm trying to expose at the moment. But, it's well worth checking out. A thing called Bear. B-E-A-R.
Bear, it's bearwriter.com. Is that it, the one?
Could be, yeah. I've got the subscription for it. It's called Bear Pro. It's the icon's like a white bear on a red background.
Yeah, that's it. Bearwriter.com. Yeah. Okay. Bear-writer.com.
Yeah, it's very good.
Excellent, mate. Good one. Adam.
All right. I sent you an image. I don't know if you have the ability to bring that up for my pick, but I'm actually picking a blog post this week. Oh. So we know this image, our favorite thing. And we know that it has this vulnerability, right? All these Death Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
So where is that vulnerability? What part of the Death Star did they attack?
Isn't it the thermal vent? Is that right?
Right. Yeah. But, okay. So where's the trench that they fly down?
Is it in the middle bit?
Which is that big? Is that trench in the middle?
Trench in the middle.
Yeah.
Is that right?
You would be wrong.
Oh, what?
It's in the dish. Yes.
I'm going to blow everybody's mind. So a blog post came up. One of the guys who was working on Rogue One, this came up when they were talking about their production dailies, and they were talking to some of, I think, the original people. I put a link to the full blog post in here. And if you think about it, so that trench, that equatorial trench, or that thing in the middle, right, that's where all the hangar bays and things are. And if you remember, when the Millennium Falcon gets pulled into the Death Star, that trench is like four or five Millennium Falcons high. I mean, it's a massive thing. And then now think to trench run. You've got three X-Wings side by side that barely fit down that trench.
Yeah, yeah.
So the trench is actually a north-south trench that they attack. And you can even see that when they're in the scene where they're doing the plans. It's very clear that trench is running from north to south. But most Star Wars fans and most people who watch Star Wars believe that the equatorial trench, I know I did until this week, that was the thing that they do their attack run down. It's not. So, little mind-blowing Star Trek. Star Wars post this week.
I haven't laid awake thinking about that, but... But thank you.
Anyway, I found that fascinating. That came up this week. So
the
Star Wars trivia for you. You can use that in the bar and maybe get a free drink.
Mate, the drink, mate, the bars that me and Muller go into, we'd be lucky to get out alive if we brought that up. Christ. Okay, so anyway, I'm glad to hear it's not the center band.
It is good. Not. Another little interesting fact that's in this thing is you see the big dish,
yeah, yeah,
on top
where the zapper comes, yeah,
right. So it's obviously in the northern hemisphere of the Death Star, right? But if you go back and look, you know, when R2-D2 is stealing the plans and the little computer animation comes up, the computer animation shows that dish dead center of that equatorial trench. It's like right in the middle. And the reason for that was the guy who was designed to do the computer animation for the series was given an original, like, painting, a concept art. And originally in the concept art, that dish was right in the middle. So he designed the computer graphic off of that. And then later it got moved. So the actual prop that got produced, be shot, it was in a different location.
Yeah, but can't they just change the attitude of the Death Star so it would be in the middle?
No, it was in the center trench was running into it, I guess is what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's
all these images are in the blog post. So go read the whole blog post. It's like fascinating.
Excellent.
If you're a Star Wars fan.
There we go. If you want to know where that is, then all you've got to do goes to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and look at the date for the 26th of January and you'll see all of the stuff that's in there. Click on the link to the Death Star and Final Trench Run. .html and you can enjoy. Doc, what have you got for us?
All right, I get something.
It's an Amazon
almost
link.
As nerd, almost as nerd.
No.
but no, this one is really helpful. So there has been a lot of hooping and hollering and kerfuffle about upgrading your various Wi-Fi capabilities, your routers and things and that in your home. And a lot of it has to do with many people, their cable services are boosting the speeds. And so if you have older kit, you actually might not be getting what you're paying for because you're paying for a higher service. In some cases, your price may not have changes, but your company gave you like double your speed. In the U.S., there's this competition right now where the guys are like doubling your speed for no reason, which is cool, except for if your kit can't handle it. Also, Apple just jumped out of the market, and I don't like to have my routers and stuff get more than about 3 years old because it is just in my head that they get slower. So I started out on
an Ethernet router gets slower with age.
Huh?
Really?
Yeah, or start having weird connectivity problems or whatever. Like, I really, in my head, I've always believed that. And anecdotally, every time you buy a new kit, your router seems faster for a while, you know? So it's mostly because you're getting kit that has newer stuff in it. So, for instance, the current up-to-date stuff is the AC-type things and whatever. Anyway, off that trip, as I started looking into this, what I've discovered, the current trend among real network nerds is to separate, like an enterprise at your home, the Wi-Fi from the router. And by pulling them apart, you can oftentimes get better speeds, especially for the stuff that you have in your house that is hardwired. Mm. In the interest of looking for all of these things, I stumbled across all the new mesh stuff that's out there, everybody that's, you know, beating on top of stuff. There's a company called Ubiquiti, and I placed the link in the chat. They're moving from enterprise into the somewhat consumer level. So the Ubiquiti nerds say you'll get the best security, throughput, everything by separating your router from your Wi-Fi access point, right? So they have this thing known as Ubiquiti Edge Router X. It's a $50 router, and basically you got the three Ethernet ports in the middle. Those are standard. You bring your cable from the company, your provider, call it U2 or whoever you use.
Yeah.
That goes in E0. The cool thing is the fourth one can now be a PoE out, which is a power over Ethernet. So now you can take your older router, or you can get one of these new fancy, nice, wide-spreading Wi-Fi things, which turns out to be best to be stuck on a ceiling somewhere or on the wall. And you can run that with just one single cable, no long wall wart with the cable running up, because you can do power over Ethernet. Well, I just switched everything down here to do this type of setup. I bought the slightly higher version, which is $150, and that's known as an Edge Router 5 over PoE, Edge Router Pro. And holy God, my company says that they send me 300, but I'm pulling like 380 because this thing has its switching is more than a dumb switch. It's an intelligent switch. So it actually manages the packets. And a lot of routers, your home routers, don't have that capability. Any enterprise-level routers, and I wish Paul was here because he knows this stuff, they actually manage packets. They have a 2 gigahertz computer or whatever inside the little box. It moves the packets where they need to go. But I was mind-blown at how much faster my network is and how everything is just flawless. And then so I remember hitting up Adam and asking him, like, what is his take on all the new mesh stuff? And the new mesh stuff is just kind of all over the map right now, but doing something like this will blow your mind. It's literally worth the $50 to try it in your house to see if it works. If you don't like it, you can always send it back to Amazon, but you'll be surprised. It's amazing. The security is better. Firewall setups and all of that stuff is easy. The interface actually shows you who the hog cheeses are in your family, like who's stealing all the bandwidth. You can click and you can see the traffic analysis. It's pretty incredible. Like, you have to go to the site and take a look at EdgeOS and see what they're doing, and you'll get it. It's quite the amazing stuff.
So what are you going to do next month when it starts to slow down then?
This one is not going to slow down.
Oh, right. Okay.
Have you seen the first review? No, so there's a lot of articles on their site as to how that they managed to work it. This literally has, you know, computers are getting cheaper now, right? So it has like one of these small, like there's a small Linux computer in there, so it's much more upgradable and programmable than before. So until a whole new like 0211.ac or whatever comes out, you have no reason to upgrade it. They can do everything through software. It's pretty incredible. You have, I mean, it sounds funny, but you have to go and look at it and you'll see. I guarantee if you spend $50 on this, or you call them up and tell them that, hey, I'm UN from BTN, send me one, and you readjust your network, you'll be mind blown.
There's one of the reviews here says it didn't last very long. Said it was great, but it didn't last very long. So your theory might be invalid there.
I think what it is they're coming from enterprise level stuff, right? So, I mean, of course, anytime you buy anything that's mass produced, you're going to get the occasional dog, but nobody sees that.
I'm winding you up, dude.
No, I'm not. I'm just giving you, that's something that should be said. We all know better, but a lot of people who aren't, say, in our position don't know better. You buy anything that's mass-produced, you'll get an occasional dog. You switch it out, and if the next one has the same problem, then you might be onto something, but you can't look at the one that you took out of the box.
Mate, you're talking to the wrong person. I get raw chicken in restaurants. If there's a shit piece on this, I got to the stage now where sometimes I walk into stores where things are on shelving, and I can't choose which one to pick up because I know that whichever one I pick up, it's going to be shit. That's me. I just I get something from Amazon, I get the shit one, and I have to send it back and get one that works. It's talk to my wife, mate. She hates me because of it. It doesn't work. My cool thing. Well done. Good. I was messing with you, Doc. I've never felt that my router got worse over time, but I shall start to see that now and curse you for it. My cool thing is a game on iOS. It's called Heads Up, and you get it on the Mac on the iTunes store. It is hilarious. We went down to see some friends last weekend, and on the Sunday we got a plan to walk around outside, and it pissed down with rain. They got this on their iPhone, and it's great. You have basically a whole pile of things that come up on the screen, and you hold it in front of your forehead. And if you get it correct, then you flip the phone down and back up onto your forehead. If you get it wrong, if you pass on it, then you tilt it behind your head and back onto the front. And everyone in the room has to try and describe what's on the screen without saying the words that are on the screen, plain and simple. It's like a Pictionary type thing, but for words. And there's whole loads of it. I think I paid $2.99 and I got all of them. So it's absolutely brilliant. Best fun I've had in ages. The kids loved it. The adults loved it. There was a great mix of stuff that was easy for kids and as well as adults. It was really, really good. Best money I've spent forever. Forever. It was awesome. Heads Up. Totally recommend it. 99p. But the basic thing's free, and then you just pay 99p for like... but I think there's like a bulk package where you can get more. So
you just discovered this week?
Yeah, I only found it out last week. Loved
wow.
It's brilliant. I didn't,
it is brilliant.
I don't spend hours scouring for kids' games for iOS.
Well,
You're obviously no fun, Ewan. That's what you wanted
Ellen
to say.
Ellen DeGeneres fan. This was built by Ellen DeGeneres.
I've never
her team.
I've never watched anything by Ellen DeGeneres.
4 years old. It's great. It's an awesome game. It amazes me how stuff gets to people at different points, even now with iOS. It's cool.
Billion apps or something stupid, isn't it? So
yeah, it's fascinating. Cool. Love this.
You're just getting me back from messing with Doc's head, aren't you? I know. No, see, I know.
It's an awesome app. It's a really fun.
It truly is.
Really fun party app.
Where can we get a hold of you, Don?
Don, that's me. You can find me over at screencastonline.com, where you'll find my weekly video tips and tutorials. You can also find me on the App Store as well. There's an app called SEO Showcase. If you don't want to become a member, you can actually purchase individual videos over on the App Store.
If you're a Mac user, you're a moron if you haven't got a Screencast Online subscription, because there is every app that's ever been made. Don has reviewed it.
Maybe. Yeah, not quite.
You've got a fair old few, though, mate, ain't you?
Yeah, there's 700 odd now. So.
And it really is. If you get an application, you're like, I wonder how that works. Go back and have a look, because Don's probably done a screencast on it, telling you how to work it and set it up.
We try our best.
Yeah, he did more
than that. I forgot what it was, but I went to a client that had an older machine, had an older version of the app, and they couldn't upgrade it because of the printer. And I couldn't remember how to do something, but it was in one of Don's videos.
So, yeah. Worth every penny. Where are you, Adam?
You can find me over at MacCast.com or MacCast on Twitter. And check out also the iOS show at theiosshow.com.
Excellent, mate. Again, one of the seminal podcasts for Mac, most definitely. And last, but my name is least, Doc, where are you?
Currently, you can find me crawling through the ceilings, rewiring my basement. Other than that, I'm all over the internet at DOCROCK.
And if you like images of roasting meat and alcohol, Doc is your man. Oh, yeah.
Most guaranteed.
Doc is your man. He is the Barry White of roasting meat and alcohol.
And roasted nads. Thanks, Steve.
Roasted nads as well. my name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Photo show is back. I'm going to record one tomorrow. We are doing it, but I've just, because I've had a month really with work that's gone ballistic, it is coming back, so please stick with us. And if you haven't listened to the photo show, then you should, because it's back, you see, and we're doing all the stuff, and Ian Lewis is helping me with that, so thanks to Ian. And please give us some reviews as well, because it's great. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and we'll be back next week Thursday for the show, because Friday I'm working. So see you next week. Thanks for listening. Sorry, Muller, was I interrupting your cough?
Sorry.
Jesus. Sure? Do you want to get another one in before I close? God almighty. It's like being here with, what was it, the Rag and Bone Men?
Steptoe and Son.
Steptoe and Son, yeah. Your old man, yeah. Steptoe. Jesus.